The governor of New Jersey has signed discrimination into law. Oh, and it gets worse.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Wednesday on The Line of Fire, Worldview Wednesday. We focus on the world on moral and cultural issues. Fasten your seatbelts, friends, and in particular, all those listening to me on WMCA in the greater New Jersey area and listening online throughout New Jersey, pay special attention to what is coming. But the story is big enough that it's got the attention of the nation, has even been reported in different parts of the world, including Israel and the Jerusalem Post. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast. If you want to weigh in at any point, if you want to take issue with what I'm saying, if you feel I'm not being truthful or honest or balanced, if you feel that I'm missing something and you want to challenge it, by all means, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, let me say this before I go any further. Jesus is Lord. He is not fearful at this moment. God in heaven, sitting on his throne, is not anxious. He is not worried. So I want to reflect God's heart and God's posture and therefore not be anxious or worried or fearful. My purpose in sounding the alarm is so that we can pray properly and act properly and respond properly. Fair enough? So, Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, Republican governor, has signed into law what is called a ban on ex-gay therapy for minors. What this means is if a young person, let's say 17-year-old, is unhappy with his or her same-sex attractions, they want to be married heterosexually and have a family produced normally with husband and wife together, or they have religious or moral beliefs because of which they're uncomfortable with their same-sex attraction, or whatever the reason may be, and their parents say, we're backing you and we're standing with you. Whatever your decision is, we're backing you, we're standing with you. And that young person says, all right, I'd like to go to a professional counselor. I'd like to go to a therapist. I'd like to try to get to the root of these issues in my life. Illegal. Illegal. Now, hang on. Let's say that 17-year-old said, I think I'm gay. I think I'm lesbian. But I don't know how to embrace that. I'm uncomfortable with it. But I'd like help in embracing it. Can I go to a counselor? Can I go to a therapist? Absolutely. How about this one? I feel I'm a boy trapped in a girl's body, and I'd like to go for counseling, and I'm 11 years old. I'd like to get hormone therapy to stop the onset of puberty so I can try to sort this through and maybe work towards sex change surgery at the youngest age possible, maybe, you know, when I'm 17 or 18. Legal? Of course! So being born male or being born female, no, that's changeable. That's malleable. That's just what the packaging looks like. Embracing homosexual identity, perfectly fine. Saying I'm uncomfortable with same-sex attraction and I'd like to get counseling or help. Maybe a 14-year-old girl was raped and has realized now that she has an intense dislike for men and even a hatred towards men, and yet she's developing attractions towards women, and she says, I want to get to the root of this. Can I go for counseling? No, you can't. Illegal. What an absolute outrage. What an outrage of government intrusion between clients, patients, and therapists, counselors. We're talking about professionals, trained professionals. New Jersey's now the second state to do it. California did it already, and it's being challenged in the courts. Oh, you need to hear what else has happened in California. We'll cover it today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Some very sober, serious things we need to talk about today. 866-348-7884. We need to understand what we should be doing, how we should be living, how we should be responding. For years, I've echoed what others have said, and it's my own conviction as well, that gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of speech, religion, and conscience in America, not just in America, in some other nations as well. That does not mean that every homosexual man or woman is evil. It does not mean that every person who identifies as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender is an activist. It does not mean that everyone is some type of a predator or sexual predator or something like that. No, I'm not saying any of that. Nor am I saying that God's love for homosexual men and women is any less than God's love for heterosexual men and women. We're all created in God's image. We're all fallen in one way or another, and we all need redemption and transformation through the blood of Jesus. Jesus said that shed the same blood for heterosexual, homosexual alike. However, there is such a thing as gay activism. There is such a thing as a gay activist agenda represented by many of the major gay activist organizations. And those who have come out of the closet in many ways want to put you and me in the closet. And those who fought for their, quote, rights want to take away your rights and mine when there is a conflict of interest. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's play clip number 8.
This morning, fresh outrage from voices on the right opposing Governor Christie's decision to ban so-called gay conversion therapy for minors in New Jersey.
The American Psychological Association has said gay conversion therapy can lead to mental health issues. Well, so can pornography, so can TV.
Christie cited concerns that the practice could be harmful to children, leading to depression or suicide. Aides say Christie was reluctant to sign a law telling parents what to do, but that he also doesn't endorse the therapy.
Chris Christie understands something very important in politics. 2013 comes before 2016. He has to win re-election in very blue New Jersey before he can even think about running for president.
Was this motivated by political correctness? Was this motivated by getting a sense for what he thought others were feeling rather than acting on conviction? Either way, signing the bill into law is outrageous. We're not talking about a parent kidnapping their own child and sending them off to some camp somewhere where they will be locked in rooms and tortured to try to get the gay out of them. Although one of the main people testifying in New Jersey, now named Brielle Godani, but born male, this individual testified that they were sent to such a camp as a teenager and endured shock therapy and harsh treatments like that. The problem is the camp never existed. It was fabricated testimony according to everything we understand. There is no record of the camp where it allegedly happened. Where was it? In Ohio. And in fact, the name of the camp came right out of a movie. And this was exposed and presented. Did it matter? No. I saw reports from the Associated Press referencing the, quote, testimony of this individual. We're talking about someone who is unhappy with their same-sex attraction, who wants to get to the root of it, and there are roots to it. Many times it can be traced. Look, I know people personally that tell me what happened in their life when they were sexually abused, and they can trace things back to that. I've talked to pastors and counselors who have ministered to, between them, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands over a period of years, thousands, but certainly hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those who were same-sex attracted. And they tell me in a large number of cases, those people reported a sexual abuse incident in their life that was very influential in terms of their own sexual and psychological development. So someone like that, And I'm not saying it's the case with everyone. Absolutely not. And I'm not denying that there are many people who identify as gay who went for counseling or therapy when they were 15 or when they were 25 or when they were 30 and really struggled when they couldn't change and felt it hurt them. I understand that. I'm sympathetic to that. This is for those who are willing and desirous and looking for help. And this is not a matter of shock treatment or some horrific barbaric therapy or something like that. This is a matter of sitting and talking with people about issues in their life, trained psychologists and psychiatrists and therapists and counselors. It'll be illegal for them to do this based on the bill. Could it be that there are people who went to weight loss programs that are now more obese afterwards and more depressed afterwards? I'm sure it's the case. Could it be that there are people who had alcohol addiction or pornography addiction or some other issue in their life and they went for professional counsel or therapy? Maybe they're 30 years old, maybe they're 40 years old, maybe they're 15 years old. And as a result of that therapy, which did not work in their lives, they are now more depressed or more addicted? Absolutely. Are we banning all of those things? No. You say, but what about all of the massive scientific data that demonstrates that this type of therapy is harmful? It doesn't exist. There is not massive scientific data that exists. You say, wait a second. Come on. You should know about this. You wrote a whole book called The Queer Thing Happened to America. Mike Brown, you should know about this. There is, in fact, a major task force report put together by the American Psychological Association. There are two major APAs in this field, the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychological Association. It was the latter that put together this task force in 2007 with about a half dozen key psychologists who were going to research the literature on what happened to those who went for counseling and therapy. And again, we're talking about those willingly going for help for counsel. Maybe it was because of religious conviction. Maybe because it was family pressure. Maybe it was things that they were uneasy with in their own lives. Maybe, look, I've talked to a bunch of gay people over the years that are not happy being gay, that have been in and out of relationships, that have not found the stability they've wanted to, that have found the sexual practices more dangerous, that have found the lifestyle contrary to the way they want to live. Oh, no, you don't have the right to try to change if you're a minor. No, So what happened with the APA task force? Well, every single person on the task force, and I document this in detail in A Queer Thing Happened to America in a very frightening chapter called The Stifling of Scientific Evidence. Every single member of the task force was either himself or herself a gay activist, psychiatrist, or psychologist, or a straight ally of the cause. Every single one. You say, well, didn't they have even one dissenting voice? Certainly there are highly qualified people in the APA, recognized academics, recognized scholars, recognized scientists, recognized therapists that don't agree with these things and that would have been an excellent other voice. No, they would not have any of those people on. Zero. So it would be like commissioning Al Gore and Greenpeace to do a study as to whether there is any human contribution to global warming. You know what the answer is going to be to that before you start. Or let's ask Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson as to whether there is racial discrimination against blacks in America. Let them study this issue. You know what the answer is going to be in advance. And I give 50 different scenarios like that where based on the people picked, you know what the answer is going to be in advance. And even at the end of it all, they had no conclusive evidence that it was harmful for all people, simply that you could not guarantee change, and in some cases, it was harmful. The fact is, when a study was done years ago to try to find those who had been harmed by counsel, advertising, looking for people like that, it took a few years to get enough people to do a study, and then even in the midst of it, some said they were helped by it. You say, haven't you heard the horror stories? Of course I have, and I'm grieved over them. I'm grieved over them. I'm pained over them. I'm pained over every story of anyone that's tried to change in any positive way and was not able to and ended up more discouraged or suicidal or depressed afterwards. This happens across the board with all types of counseling therapy, but we don't ban all of it. and especially when it's a young person, and especially when in many cases you're dealing with people who have been abused. A study was done, and it was published within circles that were accepted and affirmed by the bisexual community. Two different studies that indicated that about 75% of those who identify as bisexual had been sexually abused in their lifetimes. About 75%. This is in their upbringing and childhood. That's disproportionately high. And it tells me that that has influenced these people. Someone like that, as a young person, illegal to go for counseling. Friends, this is outrageous. Liberty Counsel, others are standing up together to oppose this bill, to fight it in the courts. And I'm going to get to California on the other side of the break to give you an idea of how outrageous things are. Oh, how about the third gender that's being recognized in Germany?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, every day that goes by, it becomes more and more clear why the Lord laid it on my heart to work for so many years, putting my book together, A Queer Thing Happened to America. And we keep hearing reports as people read the book and are impacted by it. It is a hardcover book, 700 pages with 1,500 endnotes. But those who are not big readers, don't worry, because you can pick out any chapter of interest, chapter on what's happening in the media. I mean, every chapter will be massively eye-opening. Chapter on rewriting of the Bible, chapter on the issue of ex-gay, fact or fiction, chapter on the restriction of religious rights, and on, chapter on what's happening in children's schools. It sells for $27.99, but it's yours for your gift of any size. I really want to get this to those of you who don't have the book yet. Those who can be generous and help with a larger gift, great. That'll offset those who have less. But please take advantage of this, friends. It is so urgent that you have the facts in front of you, that you have the documentation in front of you. The number to call to do this is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. Again, this is for your gift of any size, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. Also, a programming note, tomorrow is going to be a very special Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, as my colleague Scott Volk will be interviewing me and pressing me with some of the most difficult biblical and contemporary questions regarding Israel, the Jewish people, Palestinians, etc. So be sure to join us, and we'll be taking your calls with your difficult Jewish-related questions as well. Let's just play another clip regarding Governor Chris Christie signing into law the ban on so-called ex-gay therapy for minors. And then I want to move over to California.
The decision, seen by some as part of the governor's political tightrope act, while Christie does not support gay marriage.
My view and my position is that marriage should be between one man and one woman.
He did say this in a 2011 CNN interview.
I have always believed that people are born with the predisposition to be homosexual. And so I think if someone is born that way, it's very difficult to say then that that's a sin.
All right. First thing, of course, he recognizes he's teaching things, believing things contrary to the Catholic Church, and he is a professing Catholic. But more importantly, if someone is born with a particular predisposition, or even born innately with a particular genetic coding for a certain desire or behavior, does that make it right? There are scientists now who believe that pedophilia is inborn, that people are born with these desires or with the innate tendency to go in this direction, and that it can't be changed. Would anyone in their right mind therefore justify it? Governor Christie is severely overweight. I don't say that to throw stones. I need to lose some pounds myself. But he's severely overweight. What if it was determined that he had what's called an obesity gene? Yeah, there are scientists who say there is such a thing. Does that mean that overeating is fine and we should have fat pride parades? Or does it mean that we work even harder with someone like that to help them get their weight down? Scientists talk about things like a ruthless gene or an adultery gene. Oh, yeah, try that out, man. Honey, I'm just born this way. It's just the way I am. There's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. It's just the way I am. So a violent gene, scientists have talked about that. So even if it could be determined that someone was born a particular way, it says nothing about the morality of the actions, does it? Nothing whatsoever. 866-34-TRUTH to join the discussion. So what has happened now in California? Governor Jerry Brown has now signed into law a bill that says if someone considers himself transgender, no formal medical diagnosis is needed, and there really is no exact formal medical diagnosis that can be given for this. But here's a 12-year-old boy convinced that he's a girl, and this is how he's going to identify at school. Then he can use the girl's bathroom, period. That's it. And he can say, I want to play on the girl's softball team or the girl's basketball team and use the girl's locker room. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that someone's doing it to be a sexual predator. That's not my implication. My implication is what? The kid's confused and the kid needs compassionate and wise help. Why mess up everybody else? Why now infringe on the rights of everybody else? Play clip number 10.
The governor there, Jerry Brown, signed a law yesterday allowing transgender students to choose their own bathrooms, male or female, to choose their own locker rooms, and even their own sports teams that they want to play on at public schools. And this is the first law of its kind in the states.
Law. Signed by the governor. Friends, do you understand what's going on here? It's no, we can't experiment. We can't mess with things with the kid. No, we don't want a kid to go for therapy to get to the root of unwanted same-sex attraction. That can harm. Oh, but it's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine to put a 10-year-old kid on hormone therapy to stop the onset of puberty. And it's perfectly fine to get sex change surgery when the kid's 17 or 18. And it's perfectly fine to have a 6-year-old boy using the bathroom with the girls. And it's fine for the girls to be around that. And it's fine for a 17-year-old boy. What if you get a 6'11", 17-year-old boy who's convinced he's really a girl in a boy's body and he wants to play on the girls' basketball team and use the girls' locker room? Do you understand the social madness and insanity? And I've had people write to me. I've had people comment and say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Why are you being so bigoted and biased? Why are you being so hard on these children? I'm serious. Here, there is an open letter to the governor of California. This came out a few days ago by Rob Slain. Dear Mr., Ms. Brown, I hope you will forgive me for my somewhat strange and convoluted salutation. There's a reason I've begun in this fashion. And he goes on by saying, okay, when he and his family had a child and they said, it's a boy, it's a girl, was that wrong? Was that falsely said? And then, you know, Governor Brown, how can you be sure you are a man? And then go a little further, how can you be sure you're a human being? I mean, there are people who literally believe they are reptiles, they are tigers, they are lions, and they have tattoos and they get surgery to change their appearance. I was just in Gatlinburg with our family for vacation and saw some of this at Ripley's Believe It or Not, the reptile man, and he's got his tongue slit so it looks like reptilian and all kinds of tattoos. And I've seen people live out in the wild as much as they can, and they identify with these animals. You say, okay, the person has a problem. Yeah, let's help these people. I'm not condemning them. Let's help them. But no, the whole world has to be turned upside down. 866-34-TRUTH to get in the discussion. What can you do if you live in New Jersey? You need to stand up together with Liberty Council and the other groups that will be opposing this bill. You need to get educated, and you need to ask for God's wisdom to reach out with compassion to those who are struggling. Oh, by the way, you know the group, one of the main groups in America with the most striking rise in serious sexually transmitted diseases? Yeah, gay teens and young men. And we're encouraging it. Go for it. Be yourself. God help us. AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we are talking about increasing social insanity being signed into law by elected officials like Governor Jerry Brown in California and Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey. It is time for us to be salt and light. It is time for us, as the leader of the Southern Baptist recently said, to become a prophetic minority. We used to identify many as a moral majority. In many ways, a fundamental error in the movement was its wholesale embrace of the Republican Party and Republican candidates, as if that was the solution. That's a direction that many white evangelicals have gone. Many black evangelicals have embraced the Democratic Party. The solution is found in neither. The fact of the matter is, we must address these issues with wisdom, with compassion, with truth. 866-348-7884. We cannot expect the world to get this right, especially with the hijacking of so much of the psychiatric profession by gay activists, as has been carefully documented by respected liberal leaders like Dr. Nicholas Cummings, who co-authored a book on destructive trends in mental health. I cite it often in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Here is a man that fought for the normalization of homosexuality. In other words, said it's not a disorder of any kind. He fought for that in the 70s. He fought and still believes that same-sex so-called marriage is right. He is a lifelong liberal, and he is outraged by the hijacking of the profession by gay activists and their colleagues, by a tiny minority, and the pressure against those who want to publish things contrary to that, the pressure against those who want to put out the other side of the story. And he himself, when he had a practice in California working with Kaiser Permanente and had large numbers of clients coming in through the program there for counseling, He said that he and his colleagues saw thousands and thousands and thousands of men and women. And he said he helped many men live a happy homosexual life. And he said he helped hundreds of others change their orientation from homosexual to heterosexual, and says it happens. No, it's got to be denied, wiped out. And he's clear that the government has no right in infringing and parental rights and right of self-determination by a teenager to go for counseling and therapy. Yet Governor Christie tragically signed the bill into law this Monday banning so-called ex-gay therapy. The term most would be at home with is sexual orientation change efforts. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. CJ in Manhattan, thanks so much for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Many years ago, ABC News, it came on the Tuesday night, I remember, there was a show called Medical Mysteries, and transsexualism is a hormonal disorder called Klinefelter syndrome, and there is a test for that. You know, like a man, instead of being like XY, he would be like XXY, XXY.
Any actual genetic or chromosomal issues are the tiniest fraction of the people involved. I don't know if it's 99.9% of those who identify as transgender have no such chromosomal issues. They have no such hormonal imbalance or chromosomal issue. It's purely a matter of self-perception.
But, you know, the problem is, instead of making them, like if you're a man who thinks you're a woman, instead of trying to do the hormonal therapy to make them a man, they do the exact opposite. They do what they feel like. So if they feel like a woman, they try to make them like a woman.
And look, CJ, I've never had a struggle with this. I can't imagine the level of torment that people go through. But next week, I'm going to be talking to a man named Walt Heyer, who actually, after years of torment, finally underwent sex change surgery, only after years of further torment, realized he made a tragic, tragic error, and he is actually a man. But CJ, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I just signed something a moment ago. Well, you wouldn't know unless I told you something for our School of Ministry. I was just signing it. When I dated it, I realized, wow, 8/21, August 21, 2013. That's my 40th anniversary of the first message I ever preached at the age of 18. Yeah, thank God for his grace and faithfulness. 40 years later, the fire is still burning, and it's all to his glory and all by his grace. 866-34-TRUTH. Germany has now said that they will recognize a third gender on birth certificates. Now, thanks to my faithful staff, they were able to get data for me, following through on what CJ in Manhattan said, that Klinefelter syndrome occurs in about 1 in 50,000 or less newborns. When people are identifying as transgender, the vast majority have no medical basis or backing for it. It is simply how they feel. A four-year-old boy feels like a girl. He's embarrassed by his private parts. He identifies with his sisters. He likes to play girly things. He wants to wear a dress. He insists on it. Now, the fact is, many of these kids, once they get past puberty, then identify as gay and don't want sex change surgery and no longer identify as a child trapped in the opposite body. Others simply outgrow it and it disappears. But what I have heard from other counselors and professionals is the more that you reinforce it with a child, the more you have the boy dress as a girl, the more you give him the girl's toys to play with, and now instead of calling him Joe, call him Jane, and now have him use the girl's bathroom at school, the more these things get reinforced in the child, and the harder it is for them to change. I am absolutely saying this is a genuine problem. I am absolutely saying this is a genuine issue, and we should be, on a professional level, investing resources to try to get to the root of these issues, and on a spiritual level, praying and equipping leaders to help minister in these areas and having compassion on families in our congregation struggling with these things. I'm also saying it's absolutely wrong to play into it and to say that the gender is whatever someone determines that it is. Again, it's been on the books in California schools for some years that gender is whatever the child actually feels that they are. If a child feels they are male or female, that's who they are. If a child feels they are both genders, that's who they are. If a child feels they are neither gender, that's who they are. This is gender insanity. This is social insanity. And those who speak up and address it are vilified. Clip number 11, addressing the bill in California, Bill 1266, transgender student right bill, so-called, signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown, so a boy can use the girls' bathroom, play on the girls' basketball team, use the girls' locker room, if that is his self-perception of his gender.
I'm transgender myself, and I had to miss classes and programs because of my identity. And no student should have to lie about themselves in order to get all the credits they need to graduate.
All right, so for whatever reason this individual says they had to miss classes or lie about themselves, God knows all the issues involved, but I'm just curious to know if you feel that you are something contrary to what you are here. What if you were convinced that you were a white person in a black body or a black person in a white body? What if you were convinced that your ethnicity was not really Asian, but what was actually Portuguese? Would you be able to qualify for certain grants for Portuguese ethnic students in a certain community? Or just because someone feels a particular way doesn't make it so. Clip number 12, Joey.
She's going to be at a K-8 school. She could potentially have a 14-year-old boy walking in on her in the bathroom. I don't understand how we're protecting all of the children.
So let's understand this again. Gender is changeable. It's a boy. Hey, look at the ultrasound. It's a boy. No, it's male packaging. We don't really know if it's a boy or a girl. Look, there's a Canadian family that decided they, with their child, they were not going to identify the child as male or female, and only the siblings and I think the grandmother or grandfather knew. Otherwise, they were not going to say whether it was a boy or girl until the kid decided for itself what it was. And what if the kid decided that it was opposite to the way it was born? Well, then that's what it is. So everything, reality, is now determined by what a person thinks or feels. Do you understand where that goes? Do you understand where that leads? Do you understand the societal madness associated with that? Again, kids like this, they're struggling, more and more struggling. Why are more and more struggling? Is it just because they're coming out more? Or is it because of all the gender confusion in our society? Is it because of the gender confusion that's put forth and celebrated in the media? Is it because of the gender confusion of so many broken homes and lack of role models for moms and dads? That would certainly make sense. But this is now the norm, and those who oppose it are now being looked at as bigots and hateful. So Germany is going to recognize a third gender. Now let's understand something. If a child is born with ambiguous sexual organs, you do not know whether the child is male or female based on the sexual organs. The old policy used to be it was just easier to make that kid into female. That's easier surgically, so that's just what we'll do. And that, of course, proved to be disastrous because wrong choices were made. If there is something completely ambiguous and it is impossible to tell if the child is male or female, biologically, genetically, initially looking at that child, and to say, okay, we're uncertain of the gender, that is one thing. It is another thing entirely for someone to say, hey, I want to be in that third category. And there are now those cases in Australia and other places that are being documented where people say, I do not identify with any gender. I want to be recognized as genderless. And now in some states, if you have sex change surgery, you can have your birth certificate changed, which is like time travel. You're going to go back and change what happened. No, I was born this way because that is my self-perception. Friends, this is not just a slippery slope. This is absolutely calamitous collapse of reason. And the worst thing we can do with the viewpoint of helping people. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Jakob in Dumont, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. I'm sorry. Michael, my what saying is this. You're talking about the government and schools, what's happening about the kids, that so much confusion is happening. I will talk about the family. I hope you would listen to what I'm saying to you and to the people. When a child is born, a male child, the father kissed him, the brother kissed him, uncle kissed him, the mother kissed him, everybody in the family and others, they kissed him from the lips. And I happen to believe that has a big, big impact on his life. I think if we are Christians, this practice must stop immediately. A girl is born, mother kisses, sister kisses, auntie kisses, and so on and so forth. I think this is driving this kid to confusion.
Yeah, well, let me just say this, Jakob. I appreciate your passion in holding to this. I'd just like to suggest one thing, that in the vast majority of cases that we're dealing with, that would not be a major factor. Just want to say that plainly. From what I understand, that would not be a major factor in the majority of cases we're dealing with. Is it a factor in some? Could be. But I just want to state that. But thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's just stay in New Jersey. Anne in Rockaway, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I have two thoughts on this. And I really think that this is a violation of people's freedom of choosing what type of therapy they would want to go to. You know, if I had a knee problem, you know, in the United States, I should be able to go to an acupuncturist or alternative medicine or whatever, you know, type of therapy I would want to. But to have it banned, you know, by the government is just outrageous to me.
Absolutely. And let me just jump in and say that some would say, well, if you had a witch doctor operating and performing voodoo, would you allow a child to go there? And the government's going to get involved with that and have certain restrictions on children. The fact is, though, that it is a completely false comparison. Many have testified to being helped by counsel and therapy. And to sit and talk and work through why people have certain attractions and desires and to get to the root of it. We are complex human beings, and often getting to the root of things gets us to the root of a solution to help deal with them. Hey, Ann, we're out of time, but keep your chin up in New Jersey. By God's grace, truth and wisdom and common sense will prevail.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What happens to someone who has come out of homosexual practice? Now there's some who have not had a full change in their desires, but they recognize homosexual practice as sin. They're seeking to honor the Lord and live disciplined, holy lives, and God's grace is with them to do that. There are others who've experienced a shift in desires. There are others who have completely seen homosexual attraction disappear, and they're exclusively heterosexually attracted. I read the testimony of one man who had been living homosexually actively for years and got saved and prayed that God would deliver him, and then said, you know, all these men I know, they struggle with heterosexual lust all the time. So he said, Lord, give me attraction for the woman I'm going to marry. And he is sexually, romantically attracted to her, and he's not attracted to other women or men. I don't know him personally, just a friend shared that testimony with me at length. Hey, God can do those kinds of things. But what if you're like, oh, gospel artist, I guess be considered a gospel superstar, Donnie McClurkin, and you have a clear testimony of coming out of homosexuality and speak against homosexual practice, and you were going to be one of the main people performing in Washington, D.C., the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, you get disinvited by the mayor because this is a time to bring people together, not divide them. In other words, thou shalt not be ex-gay. That is where things are. Friends, be ready when churches are opposed because of this. If you minister to people, if you teach these things, just look for the loss of religious rights. Look for loss of tax exemption. This is coming your way. Hey, you're going to believe me sooner or later. I wish it wasn't so, but you're going to believe me sooner or later. Better we stand now and do what's right today than apologize to God and our kids and grandkids tomorrow. 866-34-TRUTH. Gail in Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown. And I've been listening to all the comments that have been going on, but there's one that I didn't hear, and it's something that really frightens me about men going into a women's bathroom. And that is, you can have a person that could go in and say that, well, they're transgender, they want to be a girl. But this man could have a criminal mind and lay in wait and attack a woman in a woman's room, and that really frightens me.
Yeah, you know, the Metropolitan Transit Association a few years ago in New York, after years of pressure from a man who identified as a woman and really clearly looked like a man, would go as a dress, wearing a dress into the women's room, won the right to do it so that if someone identified as transgender, they can use the bathroom of their choice in the subway system, bus system with Metropolitan Transit Authority in New York. That's been a law for several years. So, yeah, there are people who are genuinely confused in these issues, and a man really thinks he's a woman, woman really thinks she's a man, etc. And we want to have compassion on those and help them however we can. At the same time, sure, what's to stop somebody who's sexually perverted or somebody who simply is a voyeur or somebody who just wants to be among the women there? What's to stop him from going in there? Actually, nothing. So Is it a potential issue? Of course it is. You're going to tell me that everybody's too honorable for that to happen? All right, just quickly, some reaction last year when the ban, or some months back, the ban on efforts for sexual orientation change efforts was passed, the ban on therapy for minors in California. Just want you to hear some of the interaction about this. Clip number six, this is on CNN.
But it's also true that the state of California can regulate the practice of medicine, including telling doctors and any kind of care providers, you can't mislead, give advice that will hurt patients. They can't prescribe Laetril to cure cancer because Laetril doesn't work.
So this is the way this is being presented. This is the way that the story is being presented, that helping minors with unwanted same-sex attraction is like whatever. You know, just witch doctor kind of practice, bogus, false. One more clip, number seven, Dr. Drew on with Anderson Cooper.
For an adult who chooses to make the decision to go into these sorts of treatments or not, there are treatments that are dangerous. This may be one of them that needs to be established in research. Until then, we certainly shouldn't be allowing kids to be exposed to these things.
You don't want to experiment with the kids, right? You don't want to experiment with the kids. However, it's perfectly fine in California now for a boy who says he's a girl to use the girls' bathroom, girls' locker room, and sign up for the girls' sports team. And that's not going to mess with anybody. And there's nothing experimental about that whatsoever. And there's nothing experimental about two lesbian moms putting their boy of 8 on hormone therapy, wearing a patch to stop the onset of puberty already, what is it, 9, 10, 11, and then getting ready for sex change surgery at the earliest possibility. Oh, there's nothing experimental about that. But to sit and talk to someone about unwanted same-sex attractions, even in the case of arising out of sexual abuse or the like, even to say that everyone who is same-sex attracted fits into the same category and no one can possibly change, that's experimenting on your kids? God help us, friends. Listen, it is so important that you read my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Get the facts for yourself. Understand what we're dealing with. Understand what the issues are so you can pray properly and act properly and stand properly. May God give you greater compassion for those who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And may God awaken you to the realities, the real dangers of the gay activist agenda. The book is a 700-page hardcover, $27.99 plus postage. It's yours for your gift of any size to help us with our radio ministry, to help us stand for righteousness, to help us raise up compassionate men and women who'll do outreach, and men and women of courage who'll stand up for what's right, to help us be your voice, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. So help us however you can. My gift of appreciation to you for your gift of any size, the book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. If you already have a copy, this is a great opportunity to get another copy. You say, well, I got it for a gift of any size a few months ago. That's fine. If you have someone you want to give it to, if you have a pastor, leader, friend, colleague you want to get the book to, go ahead, get another copy. Again, your gift of any size, just do what you're able to do. Those who have more can help with those who have less. Number to call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. We also have some special resource offers available online. So check that out at askdrbrown.org. And be sure to click on my latest article to read that. You want to find out more about what has happened in New Jersey. That's all at askdrbrown.org. All right, my bottom line today, we are heading down a treacherous path of social, moral insanity. Only God's people, full of truth, full of the word, full of the spirit, can turn the tide back. You're about to hear an amazing story about a family that has gotten a burden to help troubled young men. Right here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, a lot of people look at what's happening in society, and it's so overwhelming. You read the news, you follow it online, you watch it on TV, especially with young people, such a lost generation in so many ways. And then the more you find out about what's happening, gangs, inner city problems, family breakdown and the effect on kids, drugs, promiscuity, what do I do? Well, I want to speak with Well, not so young. Used to be a young man. When I was a young man, he was a young man. But a brother, a friend, former student from decades ago that is relocating to the Charlotte, North Carolina area, has worked with Teen Challenge for years and is going to be starting up a brand new work to help troubled young men, boys. And we want to give you some hope. And those that live in the greater Charlotte area or other parts of the nation that want to get behind what he's doing, we'll talk about it. And if you've got some questions, issues you're dealing with, maybe a family member, maybe there's a real struggle, here's the number to call, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, without further ado, John Steigerwald. And we've known each other since, probably about 1983, 1984, both on Long Island, when you came as a student at Christ for the Nations Institute of Biblical Studies. John, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Mike, it's great to be here. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. How many years has it been? You know, I got married in 1985, so I was at Christ for the Nations prior to that. So it's, gosh, over 20 years. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, not just over 20 years, close to 30, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Close to 30. We're approaching 2015.
Well, you know, I see your hair is gray there. I've got no hair here. So, I mean, it's been a long time for sure.
Yeah, been a long time. All right, your kids. How many kids?
Four children.
And what are their ages?
So, Bethany is 25. She lives in Altoona, Pennsylvania, married to a youth pastor, my son-in-law, Micah Marshall.
Wow.
And then there's our son, Jamin, who's in the U.S. Navy. He's stationed out in Hawaii at Pearl Harbor. He's a U.S. Navy diver.
Amazing.
And then there's Elizabeth, who's a student in college. She'll be a sophomore, actually going to school this Saturday at CNU. And then there's Jared, who's the senior in high school. He's 17 years old. So we're blessed, man. We're just really blessed.
I remember when you didn't have any kids. And there's some stories as I'm thinking back. I want to talk about how you and your family went to Jamaica.
Kingston.
Yeah, the island of Jamaica and what you experienced there. And I'm remembering something that happened, though. When you went, you had a dream, wasn't it, with a rock concert on Long Island, and you actually went during the rock concert and started preaching, and the whole thing shut down. Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember. I mean, I did so many things, Mike. I mean, it's amazing you even recall that. You're probably right in that, Bill.
You don't remember that? Come on, that's a pretty major story. This happens all the time. I ask somebody to tell a story, and I remember
actually what called me to Jamaica. I can tell you about that story with Don Wilkerson.
All right, but you don't remember when you were on Long Island, you were part of our Bible school then. You got involved in an outreach. You went with some of the students. There was a rock concert. You started preaching to them. The equipment stopped working. They actually walked off the stage.
Is that right? Wow.
That's amazing. That. I should have made it bigger if you don't remember. I should have said they all got saved and the president Remember when the president flew in with a helicopter, president of the United States, and personally you let him. All right. No, that didn't happen. But here's the deal. I want to talk about the calling and burden you have because you've really given yourself, your whole family, giving yourself to make a difference in young lives. And let's start with what happened with the calling to go to Jamaica, what you experienced, the danger, the violence, and then after that, what you're doing, why God's calling you to Charlotte, North Carolina.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am sitting here in my studio with a longtime friend, colleague, and former student, John Steigerwald. And we were reminiscing in the two-minute break we had because we haven't seen each other in years and years. And John was remembering that he used to cut the lawn on our house on Long Island. And then, okay, check this out. Now, John, a few years ago, Nancy and I were talking, and we were saying, yeah, you know, we had dogs, and they got older and sick, you know, that they were sent to a farm in Pennsylvania. And she said, yeah, that's what happened. I said, well, that's what happened. We looked at each other and said, wait a second. There was no farm in Pennsylvania. That's just what our parents told us when they sent the dog to the vet. By the way, I need you, as much as you want to make eye contact after all these years, I need you right behind the mic there. Right. Otherwise, our sound guys are going to have a problem keeping your voice focused. So we realized that it was actually a myth that our parents told us that the dogs got sent to a farm in Pennsylvania. They're actually going to the vet to get put to sleep.
Yes.
But our golden retriever, Allie,
went with us.
Actually, and it was to
went with us.
It was to a farm.
Yes.
So that actually happened.
Yes.
That really happened. All right. So you were actually involved in a court case, though.
Yes.
That was a major victory, a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling. You took over a church way out on Long Island.
Lamb's Chapel.
Yeah. And how old were you then, roughly?
Oh, gosh. I was just out of Christ for the Nation. So I must have been in my mid-20s.
Mid-20s. And how big was the congregation?
The congregation was a small congregation, about maybe 25, 30 people.
Right. And this ends up being a case that gets to the Supreme Court of New York. What actually happened with that,
Well,
John?
Actually, you know, what we wanted to do, we were in a small community. Center Mauritius was the name of the community out there on Long Island. So we really wanted to minister to the community. And so James Dobson had a really good film series called Turn Your Heart Towards Home. Really reckless, right? It's a really reckless film. And so we decided to go and ask the high school if we could show it. And unfortunately, they denied us access based upon the content of the film.
So it had religious content.
Yes.
Even though it was family-oriented, it had religious content, and high school said you couldn't use it.
Yes, and so I contacted you, and then you had a friend that actually worked for, I think it was Concerned Women for America, I think it was, and you hooked us up, and I came down and visited, and we got talking. Eventually, it went to the American Center for Law and Justice and Jay Sekulow, and he argued before the court, and it became a landmark decision that actually was 9-0. It was remarkable. I had been gone. By the time the ruling came down, Alan Snap, our good friend, was actually the pastor that time, so it was 3 years after that, but it was really an amazing, amazing decision.
Yeah, so these were two students from our little Bible school on Long Island U, followed by Alan.
Yes.
And remarkably, this thing ends up going to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Landmark 9-0 decision. It was Lamb's Chapel versus
The Center Mauritius Board of Education.
Yeah, amazing. All right, so you were pastoring, you've done pastoring and church leadership over the years.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that you and your family got involved with Teen Challenge, drug rehab ministry, and then how in the world did you get to the island of Jamaica?
Great question. You know, so Mike, so after Christ for the Nations, went out to Eastern Long Island, pastored there for 3 years, and then the call of God came, and we moved to a little place called Toccoa, Georgia, and we were there for 7 years, pastored
a church. How did you know God was calling you?
Well, that's an interesting. Remember Dennis Bambino? He came and he spoke at our church, and God really used
another former
Dennis,
student,
yes, another
faculty
former
member.
Student. God really used him. At that time, I was praying and fasting and asked God, what was the next step for me, and where did he want me to go? And I'd sensed this calling to go plant a church in Georgia, and so God really used Dennis to confirm that. And so we kind of just loaded the family up, moved down to a place called Toccoa, Georgia, and planted the church. And I was there for about 7 years. And then from there, actually moved to Kingston, Jamaica.
All right. So let's paint a picture of Toccoa, Georgia, because I've preached there for another former student, Brian, another colleague who's in North Dakota now. But I preached
Stevens
there.
Stevens County.
Right. It's
rural.
Right. It's rural. It's kind of traditional religious.
Yes.
A lot of maybe church going that's just traditional.
Yes.
All right.
So the one of the people that testified in the Supreme Court decision worked at Toccoa Falls College.
Christian Missionary Alliance College.
Yes,
I've spoken there too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So he came and we spoke about, because that time God was stirring our heart to actually move to Toccoa. And he came and said, why are you going to plant a church in Toccoa because of the reasons why you just
mentioned?
You
got a million churches.
You got a million churches there. And so we started sharing the vision of what, you know, in a Acts chapter 2 church, right? Relationships, preaching the gospel, the power of God moving. And he said, wow, that really sounds like an amazing church, and Toccoa can certainly use a church like that.
All right, so from Toccoa, Georgia, though, rural Southern America, a lot of Christian culture there, you go to Kingston, Jamaica. Was it dangerous being there?
Yeah, it was really dangerous, Mike. You know, I mean, what brought us to Jamaica was the fact Christ of the Nations had a satellite program there, and so I spoke at that school a number of times. And during one of those trips, we were having a marriage retreat, and I remember walking through the streets in Montego Bay and seeing a woman lying in a gutter. And my heart was really moved for her, and there were just hundreds of people just passing her by. My wife, Darlene, was with me, and another couple was with us. And so, man, I just was burdened for this woman. I went back to the school, Christ for the Nations. I said, where is the nearest Teen Challenge? Because as a pastor, you have to have resources to help people. And so Teen Challenge was a ministry that I would kind of send people to. And they looked at me and said, Teen Challenge, what's that? And that was the beginning of God putting a burden in my heart. And then 2 years later, throughout a process of God leading and God guiding and confirming, we ended up moving to Kingston, Jamaica. Got in touch with Don Wilkerson, got in touch with Teen Challenge. Global Teen Challenge was actually forming at that time. Here's an interesting piece of information. When I came back and I was so stirred by what I saw, and we started praying, my wife and I, and I just remember telling her, you know, we've got to do something. And so I called Teen Challenge, and I said, guys, listen, there is a need in a place called Jamaica for a ministry like Teen Challenge. And so they put me in touch with Don Wilkerson and Jerry Nance. Well, I called those two guys, and they said to me, well, why Jamaica? Why Kingston? I told them the story I just told you. Well, you know, the God that we serve is a God of divine synchronization. It just so happened to be that they were there only a few months earlier than I was.
Really?
Uh-huh. And so they were, you know, they had Jamaica on their target. It was a target for them. And so I, you know, some stranger called them. And then through a series of meetings, you know, God definitely confirmed and we moved our family there.
All right. Now you had little kids at that point, correct?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
And you and your family are white?
Yes.
You were in a predominantly black area.
Yes.
Was there hostility towards you as a white family, or were you viewed with skepticism because of some of the history there?
Well, I wouldn't say we were viewed because of our ethnicity or our color at all. There are some amazing Jamaican friends that I have, and I think the supposition is that most people are African American descent. But you know, Jamaica is a melting pot of Chinese and Arabs and some amazing people. But when we went there, the challenge was with the violence, Mike. That's what it was. It was with the violence. We originally thought we were going to live in Montego Bay, but really God made it very clear that we would move to Kingston. Now, I have subsequent, I mean, I go back to Jamaica probably 4 or 5 times a year because of the program that's there, and we've got a medical clinic that we actually host in a place called Grants Pen, which is one of the most violent places. But, you know, I have more respect, and the pastors that I relate to in Jamaica have more respect in those hot pockets because of what they do for the community, the compassion, the grace, the mercy that they actually minister to the community. So when we moved there, we had some challenges. There were a lot of violence, and you know, we just had to make sure we were not going to certain places at certain times of the night.
And did you ever have shootings right by your house? Did the kids hear gunshots and things?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, gunshots were a part of life there. You know, Teen Challenge, you get guys coming into the program, and we had a lot of deportees that came to the program. They were individuals that had had some felony offenses here in the U.S., or they had offenses in Canada or offenses in England, and they were sent back to Jamaica. And so these guys developed crack addictions and drug addictions, and then they found their way to Teen Challenge. And so they came from living very violent lives. And, you know, life on the street in Jamaica for the garrison communities, they call it political tribalism, because you've got these communities that have an affiliation with a particular party. And in order to vote, sometimes there are terrible things that people do so you don't make it to the polls. Well, we had guys that came into the program that actually lived in those communities and had gotten involved with drugs and made their way to our program. And I heard some stories that, you know, only the grace and mercy and forgiveness of God can cleanse our heart.
And we've just got 30 seconds before a break. But in the years there, did you see men who had been violent men, long-term addicts, transformed?
Absolutely, by the power of God, by the power of God. The current director, Anthony Richards, good friend of mine, precious brother in Christ, him and his wife are now carrying the banner forward. He was transformed. I'd love for you to meet him someday. He actually was a police officer and got involved in some stuff, but now God's transformed his life. He's been the director now for about 8 years.
Amazing. So friends, you may have a loved one, you may be listening yourself and struggling with heavy addiction, or you're involved with violent crime. There is hope for you in Jesus, and there are programs where you can go and live. Oh, you'll have to make a lifestyle change, but you'll be supported. You can be changed. There is hope on the other side through the gospel.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, John Steigerwald, relocating with his family to the greater Charlotte area to start a very important work, a very important program. He and his family lived in the island of Jamaica in the midst of violence and heavy drug use with a teen challenge program. He's been an associate pastor in Virginia for 10 years and now got the call to relocate. And if you have a question, if you have someone in your family, a young person, someone that is battling with addiction, struggling in different ways, John would love to speak with you. He's been on the front lines of helping people and seeing them changed through the power of the gospel. So, John, before we talk about what's coming in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, human beings have been messed up since the fall. We understand that. Cain killed Abel. We understand that. We know there have been problems in every generation. But a lot of things accelerated in the 60s, the counterculture revolution. I was part of that. If not for the influence of rock music, drugs, I never would have done what I did. I wouldn't have been shooting heroin at the age of 15 and living the decadent life I was living before the Lord saved me at 16. And now we know with the rampant effects of no-fault divorce, the breaking up of the families, the fatherlessness, and so much of the inner city, illegitimacy on the rise, and on and on and on. Teen suicide increasing, and kids cutting themselves. And has drug use in all of this gotten worse? Has it been steady? Are parents often in the dark about what's happening with their kids? Or kids using drugs at younger ages? Now, what's your perception, having been on the front lines of this for years?
Well, I think you just said it right there, Mike. I think, you know, there's been definitely an increase in it. And what we're seeing in our area where I live is this prescription drugs, right, which is an opiate, right? I was just with a family the other day, this past Saturday, a mom and a dad with a 22-year-old daughter, right? She had started off with prescription drugs. And we got into this meeting, we started talking, and I asked her what she was using, and she said she was using heroin. And I said, show me the tracks. And she showed me the tracks. I'll tell you what, I've never seen a man weep and cry like this dad did. It was absolutely amazing to me. He left the room because there was so much pain in his life to see his baby daughter struggling with an addiction. And so we started a conversation with this young lady that, you know, she's got a couple of felony charges on her right now, and her best hope is to get into a long-term treatment program with a God focus, with a gospel-centric focus that can kind of transform her life. You know, one of the things I've learned is that, you know, the gospel is the core message to change lives. It's not behavior modification.
Mm-hmm.
It's heart change, and that's what the gospel is about. God will change hearts. The word of God will change people. And so, yes, I mean, we live in an age right now, there's been huge cultural shifts. Think about 40 years ago, the television program, Father Knows Best, mm-hmm. right? So the male role is now, I mean, male role models are not, they're not elevated, they're not respected. We got shows like what? The Simpsons. The guy is a babbling idiot buffoon. And so I think there are a lot of reasons why, but what's going on in the family and the disintegration of the family.
From Ozzy and Harriet to the Osbournes.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Right. So when folks, I talk to our students in our ministry school. In fact, my class next week that I'll be teaching, my night class next Tuesday night, I'll be talking about this very thing, the shift from the 60s until today. And I'll ask them, young people, have you ever seen shows like Leave It to Beaver? Yeah, they laugh about it. Yeah, it seems corny and cheesy. When I was growing up watching it, that just seemed like a normal show.
Yeah.
We didn't think there's no family in the world like that. And, right. and yet suddenly this wrenching generation gap and shift and so on. So these problems exist in a serious way. It's not just in the inner city. It's in the suburbs as well.
It's not. Right now, I was just talking to a principal just a few hours ago who actually lives in Virginia, and we were talking about the crisis with boys. And so when we say crisis with boys in our nation, we're talking about underdevelopment and underachievement. And he said to me, you know, John, it's not only the under-resourced community where there's challenges, there's the family that has the $500,000 home, mom and dad are traveling up the beltway, and the kid is locked in a room with video games.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are huge issues going on. There are presence issues going on, right, with dad not being at home. And so we're seeing this fatherlessness, whether the father be present in the home but not present, or he's not there. And so, you know, with the academy that we want to raise up, we really want to create environments where men connect with boys and boys are able to learn, one, about God, two, about God's character, and three, given opportunities to grow and to develop with a love for God.
All right, so let's just take 2 minutes. We've got a break coming up. And in the next half hour, I want to get into this in more depth, what
sure.
the vision is, what the needs are, and what's actually going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And friends, wherever you live in America, these are relevant issues, and the principles that will work in Charlotte, North Carolina, will work anywhere in America. They worked in Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica. So, John, just a real quick overview. What are you going to be doing in North Carolina?
Okay, so we're going to be acquiring a property up in the Lake Hickory area, Mike. If I had to give you like a 30,000-foot view of what the program's going to be, it's going to be an academy that's going to focus on a couple of things. It's going to focus on discipleship, number one.
What ages?
12 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
Boys 12 to 17. And so they're going to focus on discipleship. We're going to focus on developing learning environments, academic environment, and also not only teaching boys in the classroom about tadpoles, but taking them out into the lake and showing them what it means to kind of just engage in God's environment.
And just real quick, are they going to live there?
Yes, they're going to live there. It's a residential program.
So kind of like a boarding school.
Yes, a boarding school.
Got it. And where are these kids going to come from?
Anywhere. Anywhere. They can come from the North Carolina area. They can come from any state in the United States.
All right. 12 to 17.
Yes.
This is a serious investment of time,
yes.
energy. You've got property planned out for this?
Yes, we do. There's a 30-acre property we're actually in the process of acquiring right now. We're building a group of people who are going to be investors to help us secure that property. So the vision's moving forward. I'm traveling back and forth. My last day at Stafford Crossing in Virginia is December 31st. So, Mike, it's kind of like they say, you just have to bite an elephant one bite at a time, right?
Yeah, well, this is tremendous. How many kids are you going to be able to facilitate?
Well, currently right now, the capacity is going to be about 50 kids.
Wow.
50 kids. And so and not only the kids, we want to also minister to the families too.
Right, so they're going to come from every kind of imaginable background, all be together. If you could, I'm sure you will. You'll take a snapshot of them physically and in every descriptive way when they get there, and then you want to take a snapshot when they leave, and then 20 years later. All right, friends, last hour I talked about the outrage in New Jersey where Governor Christie has signed into law a ban on minors getting professional help for unwanted same-sex attraction. It is an outrage. My book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, every day that goes by becomes more and more essential reading. It's 700 pages, 1,500 endnotes, And whatever chapter you're interested in, if you're not a big reader, read the chapter on what's happening in children's schools. Read the chapter on what's happening in colleges. Read the chapter on the rewriting of the scriptures. Read the chapter on what's coming through the media. Read the chapter on the loss of religious rights and freedoms. It sells for $27.99 plus postage. It's yours for your gift of any size. We really want to get the book out to you. It's so essential you understand what's happening throughout America. So call right now. This is available by phone only. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. It's not often we do this, so take advantage of this. Your gift of any size. Help us as you're able. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am looking on Facebook at the North Carolina Boys Academy. The website is under construction. But there is a Facebook page up, and I'm speaking with a longtime friend, colleague, former student going back almost 30 years, John Steigerwald. What's your official role going to be at the Academy?
I'll be the executive director.
Executive director. This is going to be in the greater Charlotte area. How many acres?
It's 30 acres, Mike.
30 acres, and this is going to be Academy for boys, a boarding school, age 12 to 17. They'll have capacity for about 50 of them. This is to teach them, to train them academically, to mentor them, to ground them in the gospel, to have godly men pouring into these kids. It's going to be something extraordinary, and would to God that we had thousands and thousands of these all over America as opposed to way too few. And John, you've had experience as a pastor. You've had experience leading a teen challenge ministry in the island of Jamaica. You've also had experience as a dad. And if you have a question for John Steigerwald, Pastor Steigerwald, now Executive Director Steigerwald, feel free to call 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. But John, you went through a battle with your own son, Jamin. How old is Jamin now?
Jamin's 24.
24. Is it a miracle that he's 24?
Yeah, it's a miracle he's 24 for sure. It really is. You know, Mike, we have four wonderful children, each one God designed so differently. You know, and you know, when you experience challenges with kids, I mean, it really, it's so painful to go. And, you know, my wife and I, we've committed to pray for our kids every day. And then when something begins to go awry, you're like, what's going on? And so, you know, Jamin back in 2011, he turned 21. And so part of his constitutional right, he went out and purchased himself a firearm. And so I had no problem with that at all. But my concern was, hey, Jamin, I want you to go get some safety training because using a firearm is really, really important. We want to make sure that we have safety. And so, you know, he was challenged throughout his teen years. And when we came back from Jamaica, he really didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay. He loved the island. But he came back. And so, long story, very, very short, what happened with him is in September of 2011, he actually took off on his motorcycle, Mike. He had an encounter with my wife and I, was making some demands, powered up on us, and said, you know, said some very hurtful things to my wife and I, very painful. And I remember when he took off on his motorcycle, he had a crotch rocket. I remember walking to the garage door and looking at him and praying a simple prayer, God, watch over this young man and protect him from himself.
What kind of rocket did he have?
He had one of those motorcycles, man, that just went really fast.
Okay. Got it. Just make sure everybody
really
knows the terminology
fast,
there.
Really fast.
All right. So what happened
was I went back in the house and I thought to myself, you know, I mean, and this is where drawing boundaries as a parent is so critical. You know, sometimes you really don't want to draw boundaries, but you got to. You have to draw boundaries with them. And so I had drawn a boundary with him, and he decided to step over, and he took off. And I remember sending him a text that night and saying, son, I want you to know something. I love you very much. But the way that you handled yourself tonight, the anger you demonstrated in the presence of your mom and your other siblings is unacceptable. Now, listen, you got to step up and be a man. Let's have a conversation. You know, Mike, that was the last text I sent to him. I got a phone call from my wife the very next day about noontime. I was out with lunch with a friend. And it's a phone call that no parent wants to receive, but my wife was crying. And she said, John, Jamin's been in a motorcycle accident.
Mm. All right, hold that right there. Friends, John Steigerwald is speaking from personal experience. He and others are going to be pouring into young men in Greater North Carolina area, but they can come from all over, 12 to 17-year-old. We'll tell you more about that when we come back, and you'll hear not only the nightmare of what happened with Jamin, but the happy ending as to where he is today. And we'll take your calls, too, 866-342.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, right before the break, John Steigerwald, pastor, now will be executive director of the North Carolina Boys Academy that'll be starting up next year for boys 12 to 17 years of age. It is a boarding school. They will get an academic education, but more importantly, they will get a spiritual life education by men that will be pouring into these boys. It'll be a life-changing environment that will be thoroughly gospel-based. But John, you went through your own crisis with your son, Jamin. You're down leading a teen challenge ministry in Jamaica. Jamin now gets into a serious motorcycle accident after you had made clear to him that his behavior and attitude were unacceptable. You put up boundaries, and yes, you violated those boundaries, and your wife calls you crying with a message. What happened?
Yeah, so I get the phone call, Mike. I was actually getting a cup of coffee. I'll never forget the day. I was getting a cup of coffee at Wawa, and she called. You know, it's the call that no parent ever wants to receive, man.
Mm.
And she said, Jamie's been in a motorcycle accident, and the hospital was only 3 minutes down the road, so I just dropped the coffee and took off, right? It's the longest ride of my life. I got to the hospital and he was in the trauma center.
Oh.
And so motorcycle, what in the world happened here? And so actually I was able to go back there about 5 minutes into it, and there he was on a gurney. I looked on the floor, all his clothes were cut off. I didn't know what to expect.
Mm.
And so I went over to where he was being worked on, and I looked at him. I thought, certainly this young man's going to be mangled. He's not going to look anything like I last saw of him. And man, Mike, there wasn't. The doctor was putting a couple stitches in his lips, and a doctor was putting a couple stitches in his chin, and they looked at me and said, he's going to be okay. And I burst into tears, was overwhelmed with just such joy, and I left the room. The doctor followed me out and said, Mr. Steigerwald, what's wrong? You know, they had no idea of the backstory, right?
Right, right.
No idea. So a police officer walked up to me and said, hey, listen, is that your son inside there? I said, yes, it is. He said, man, it's a miracle. I've been on the force for over 20 years. That kid went about 50 miles an hour into the back of a UPS truck, and it's even amazing he's alive right now.
Mm.
We walked him out of that hospital, Mike, about 4 hours later. Obviously, he didn't walk, but we put him in a wheelchair. But here's the interesting thing. You know, when he left the night before, one of his final parting words to my wife and I was some words parents never want to hear. You know, I hate you, and I don't need you.
Mm.
So, you know, when the doctor said he could go home, I remember the nurse coming in, and they dropped these medical clothes on the table, because his clothes were cut off, right? And they said, someone needs to put these on. And I think God has an amazing way of turning things around. So my wife wasn't going to put him on. He was in his birthday outfit, right? And so the people left, and I started putting his clothes on, and he started to cry. And he said to me, Dad, I'm so sorry. Well, at that moment, Mike, you know, what you do is you don't rehearse what happened the night before. I put my arms around him, and I just said, son, we're going to work this out, right? Those are some of the most difficult times. And, you know, I would want to say to you that I always did it that way. I didn't. I didn't always do it that way. I reacted. But I've come to learn that, you know, God's grace and God's mercy, our son needed to be responsible for his actions. But in his moment of need, it was a moment to love and to accept. And so, you know, the long and the short of it is I thought his Navy career was over, because he was told by the recruiter that no more problems with the law. After the police officer had spoke to me, he handed me 4 tickets. No registration, no license, reckless driving, and no insurance.
Ugh.
Oh.
He was done.
Done, yes.
Done deal. Right, so we bring him home, we go pick the motorcycle up, and I have some conversations with him, and then he says to me, Dad, when I go to court, I'm going to hire a lawyer. And I said to him, why are you going to hire a lawyer? Dude, you're guilty. Because his friends were counseling to hire a lawyer. I said, listen, as a pastor's son, I've been in courtrooms plenty of times, and I see when an attorney tries to turn something around when actually the defendant is actually guilty. I said, here's the best case scenario as your dad. Son, just admit your guilt and throw yourself on the mercy of the court. And I said, write a letter to the judge, of which he did. And I stood with him that day. We got to the courtroom that day about a month later after the accident. We prayed. He cried again. And, Mike, those are those precious moments. Those were bonding moments between my son and I. Just, and he went in there. And I remember looking at him and looking at the judge. And when the judge asked him to step forward to the bench and read the letter, now the judge went about his business writing. And as Jamin got through his second or third sentence, the judge put his pen down and looked at him. And I knew something was happening. He reduced all the charges. Jamin had some fines to pay. But the amazing thing is that he was able to go to boot camp that next March, went on to pre-dive school, went on to dive school in Panama City, Florida. And out of 28 guys, six of them made the dive program, and he's serving out in Hawaii. We believe that's a miracle. Mm. We believe that God, for whatever reason, I don't know why my son didn't die that day, but God preserved his life, and we're very grateful and very thankful. And that's part of the motivation by which we want to give back. We want to be able to help families, to encourage parents to stay in the fight.
John, thank God for his mercy, and for him to say one day, and you're telling me the story with tears in your eyes, even though it's years ago, for a son to say, I hate you, I don't need you, and then the next day you're having to put his clothes on. And wheel him out in the wheelchair to come back to the house. And he's alive to talk about it with a bright future in God. God's mercy is amazing. Let's talk to a parent. Donna in Salt Lake City, Utah. You're on the line of fire with John Steigerwald. How can we help you?
I have a question. I have a 17-year-old son, and he's addicted to porn. He's in denial about it, and he's already gotten into trouble with the law because he was sexually harassing somebody online. And he goes to counseling. I've had a couple of mentors from church try to help him. He goes to a support group at one of the local churches. He just doesn't open up to anybody. And with the mentoring, it's pretty inconsistent. I don't know what it is, but it seems like, I don't know if it's because he's not fully into it or the mentor is just too busy. It's just very inconsistent. And I just don't know what to do. And I found something the other day that's just indicating that it's just getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
He was exposed to it when he was very little. Father is also a sex addict, alcoholic, lives in a different state than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's been exposed to this, when he's with the dad. The dad just doesn't support anything as far as trying to put protection online when my son goes to visit them.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very painful situation to be in, and I can feel for you. For my son, I just had a conversation with him the other day as he flew back from Hawaii, and we were talking about his spiritual journey, and I was emphasizing to him three things, foundations for following Jesus. And so I think I would offer this to you. At the end of the day, your son really needs to focus on God's word. God's word will transform his life. He needs to have a steady diet of that. He needs to be involved with community, a local church. I'm certain there's got to be a local church in your community where there's a pastor or pastors that can come around you and provide you with a support system. There even may be a Teen Challenge in your community. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Teen Challenge, but certainly you could go on the web and you can just Google Teen Challenge, and there are a ton of resources out there. And then also, I mean, as a mom, you know, my wife and I, prayer is the most powerful thing, the most powerful force on this planet. And I don't know if you've got a support system, but I would encourage you, if you've got a couple of close friends that you can confide in, that they can pray with you and support you in this process. You know, one of the toughest things that I think parents need to do with their kids, and, you know, he's 17, quickly approaching adulthood, is that there's got to be some boundaries drawn, and there's got to be consequences for action, right? And you're a single mom, and you're actually carrying the torch forward, so I commend you. I mean, this your son has no idea of how much of a great mom he's got, the fact that, you know, you're super concerned for him, and you're reaching out for help. But there's got to be boundaries. Dr. Henry Cloud has got a really good book on boundaries. I'd highly recommend that for you. He can.
What's the author's name again?
Dr. Henry Cloud on boundaries. Very good book. Cloud's got a wonderful website with videos to watch too. And so, but I think, you know, your local church, are you involved in a local church?
Yes. And, you know, I have gone to the church, and there have been a couple of pastors that have, you know, agreed to mentor my son. And it's been going on for, you know, a few years, two or three different people. But like I said, my son just won't open up, and he'll make it seem like everything's okay, and he's acting out at home.
So, Donna, let me just, we've got a break coming up, but I just want to add my own comments as well and reinforce the fact that God can reach him as you pray. We need the Holy Spirit to turn up the pressure in his life. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. I'm joined by my guest, John Stargerwald, who is going to be establishing a boys' boarding school in the greater North Carolina, greater Charlotte area, an academy for boys 12 to 17 years old. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But Donna, I just wanted to come back to this last thing. When I was shooting heroin and using drugs heavily, the ages 14, 15, 16, started with smoking pot. By the time I was 15, was shooting heroin and was just decadent, wild, out of control in so many ways. I boasted about it. I thought it was cool. I thought I was doing what the rock stars did. And I was proud of my sin. To my shame today, I'll tell you, I was even proud of stealing money from my own father. Well, people prayed for me. People I didn't even know were praying for me. If I knew they were praying for me, I would have mocked the whole thing. But the Holy Spirit brought me under deep conviction, Donna. Such deep, intense conviction that I actually tried to change certain drugs so I wouldn't take a drug at night that would keep me up at night. Because I was so guilt-ridden. I'm talking about 1 week before, I'd lay in bed at night high on drugs, boasting to myself about what I had done. 1 week later, this thing is gnawing at me in conviction. And when God saved me, he really deeply saved me. So I just want to encourage you that the best thing you can do, the absolute number one best thing you can do, is pray and cry out to God, because your husband or the boy's father is not living right and is into the same sins. That makes it much harder. But you can touch God in prayer. You and your friends can touch God in prayer. God can bring him to the end of himself. And his big issue is not pornography addiction. His biggest issue is really having a breakthrough in God.
So, you know, Mike, that's interesting. The 3 weeks prior to Jamin's motorcycle accident, during my devotion time, I was in prayer and I was on the carpet, my face in the carpet, crying out for my son's soul. And so the importance of prayer, just continue to intercede and pray that the Holy Spirit, as you said, Mike, will touch this young man's life.
Amen. Absolutely. Donna, hang in there, Lord. We ask you to touch this young man and to break his hardness with the reality of your love and goodness. Bring your Holy Spirit conviction into his life and save him, transform him in Jesus' name. Yes. Hey, Donna, hang in there. Hope is always fresh in God. So, John, as we think now about these young men, 12 to 17, 50 young men you'll be able to take in boarding school, what kind of backgrounds are you expecting them to come from? What kind of problems might a 12-year-old already be encountering?
When you think about it, Mike, I mean, kids 12 years old today, I mean, they're in school 13, 14 years old. Some of them could be having any type of the disorders that they've kind of defined them, right? I mean, I think one of the problems with today is that some of our boys are over-medicated. And I think part of the problems is classrooms have become designed that are not, they're not designed for boys. Boys are filled with energy, right? And so we've over-medicated them. And so boys could be coming to us with any type of challenge, any type of problem. Sometimes it's a boy from a single parent home. Sometimes it's boys that've got just behavioral issues at school. Sometimes it's boys that are in problems with the law already at 12 years old. Sometimes it's boys that are already experimenting with drugs. You know, I worked in an adult men's program for a number of years, and when we get these guys, I mean, they're like your own personal testimony, they're deeply entrenched in their alcohol, their drugs, or their pornography. My hope, our hope as a staff at North Carolina Boys Academy, is we get these young men when they're 12 and 13, and rather have to pour out of them, we can pour into them. So they could come to us with any kind of behavioral issue.
So you're going to have kids, potentially 17-year-old who's been in gangs, 15-year-old who's been sexually active for 3 or 4 years, a 14-year-old who's addicted to pornography, on and on and on, mm-hmm. all these things, and you guys are ready in Jesus to help them.
We're getting ready, absolutely.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So we as we get closer, what's the launch date of this, John?
This is going to be in September of 2014, Mike.
All right, so we're a little over a year off. As we get closer, we want to bring you back in to talk about this, and then we want to hear what's going on. We want to hear some of the testimonies and give hope and encouragement to others. I know as you've been hooking up with some of the leaders in North Carolina and greater Charlotte area, we've got listeners across America now, but many listeners all over North Carolina. There were some ministries, men's ministries, that you wanted to mention in particular. So just share those with our listeners.
Sure.
This may be just what somebody needs.
Yeah, so there are a couple of adult men's program here in North Carolina. There's one in the greater Piedmont area. Someone can go online and Google that. It's the greater Piedmont area. It's called Teen Challenge, greater Piedmont area. And the director there is Robert Harmon. He's been there for a number of years. Great program. You can call there if you've got a loved one or a relative or a friend that actually needs a program. There's the greater Piedmont Teen Challenge. And then there's a teen challenge, and it's called Sand Hills Teen Challenge. My good friend Sal DiBianca and his wife Debbie have been working there for a number of years. That's in the Sanford area. So if there's anyone that's got a loved one, like I said, or a friend that is an adult male and they need a teen challenge program, they can actually call those programs.
All right, 2 minutes. Give me a picture of someone whose life was changed, what they were before, what they are now. Paint a picture of someone you've witnessed with your own eyes what Jesus has done.
Anthony Richards from Jamaica, when he came into the program, I'll never forget when he came in. He came in and he was suffering with an alcohol addiction. And Mike, I think you did a video with, was it Don Wilkerson? What was it titled?
Son of Sam to Son of Hope.
That's right. So yep. So that video ties into Anthony's story. Actually, so Anthony came into the program and he was a mess. His life was just a mess. And he got plugged into the program. And I'll never forget, one of the staff was showing that video on a particular night, on a Wednesday night. And Anthony saw it. And it moved him so deeply that he didn't believe that God could forgive him.
Really?
And it was through that video that he experienced the grace and mercy of God. Mike, he not only graduated from the program, but he is now the executive director of Teen Challenge Jamaica.
Can you say that no matter how far someone's gone, violent acts, drugs, sexual acts, sins against family, that God can still forgive?
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, the gospel is the gospel because Jesus says, come as you are, right? Repent and receive forgiveness.
Right, so you come as you are, and you're transformed
absolutely
by Jesus. That's the gospel. John, I'm thrilled, man. We're going to be in the same neck of the woods
yes, sir.
Again after so many years, finally seeing each other face to face and hearing what you're going to do. It's wonderful. We will keep you posted on this. Some of you are already saying, I'm my kid. I want to find out. All right, if you need to know in advance,
Facebook.
just get to us at AskDrBrown.org, and we will send you to the website, other info as it's available. And again, as we were talking in the first hour about issues having to do with homosexual activism in society, so essential to get my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, $27.99 hardcover, 700 pages long, but yours for a gift of any size. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, it remains wonderfully true. Jesus not only saves to the uttermost, he saves from the guttermost.